really what we're here to talk about is does the application of AI make your data smarter? The answer is a resounding it depends. It depends on what the use case is and how much time and effort you want to invest. It depends on the state of the technology that you're trying to use. So this panel is about the reality of the now, right? So what can we do? So we're going to start by talking a little bit about things that AI actually really improves, practical things that AI actually really improves. Things that come to mind are things like AI-based security, natural language processing, and we've got a great panel over here that have experience in these things, and they're gonna take us through it. So I'm gonna start off with Erica and put her on the spot, but I just realized I didn't do intros, did I?
You don't need to intro me.
I don't need to intro you. I'm David Sugg. I'm going to let Erica intro herself, and then we'll go across, and then Erica will get a question for me. My apologies.
Hello? All right. Hi, I'm Erica Steele, and my footprint is in many different entertainment companies, such as Viacom, MGM, Sony, and now Disney. I am actually, artificial intelligence is at my heart. I am certified from MIT in implementing AI into organizations. I'm executive producer of over 15 internationally acclaimed films that are cause-based, focusing on suicide awareness and multiple different other causes. I also am on the Autonomous Car Advisory. I worked with the RAND facility in solving IoT AI type of implementations with Homeland Security and some DoD. I am working with green energy, and I also working on a neuroscience application for anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, and Parkinson's.
Cool. Kyle?
Wow.
yeah.
That's amazing. Kyle Hufford, digital asset management. I currently work at Monster Energy. I have a passion in photography. I think AI can be a huge help with images and image tagging, and also in connecting systems more than just digital asset management, but across an organization, whether or not it's marketing systems or marketing automation or tools or project management or things of that nature.
Tom?
I'm Tom Ohanian. I'm at IBM, Watson Media and Weather. We've merged with the Weather Company, so we're unified in what we're bringing to the market and so forth. I handle sales and business development relationships and so forth. Long history in this business, my career has basically been one where it's been, you know, very innovative companies doing things, hopefully, that, you know, haven't been done before. I was on the founding team at Avid Technology, for example, invented a lot of the products over there, lots of patents and so forth. So if it's something that sort of is early, new, or a really exciting field, something I usually try to gravitate towards.
That's Matt.
Passion for data and content.
Thank you.
Don't forget to introduce yourself, David.
Oh, yeah. So I'm David Sugg. I look after content architecture and engineering for Warner Brothers. So that spans the range of the traditional sort of asset management systems that you would expect through master data management and the application of technology to our content business. So now that we've established the fact that there's people on this panel that know a few things, we'll jump into the questions I was trying to have a minute ago. Erica, how do you see the security landscape changing under the influence of AI?
Well, there's been a lot of changes just recently. There's a new generation of AI, and I think about the big three. We've got Amazon, we've got Google, and Microsoft, and multiple startups who actually are implementing AI in different ways, mostly machine learning, the narrow version of AI. But with that, there's a lot of predictive and adaptive types of security that now is available, where it can actually be one step ahead of the hackers from a lot of data. It's got to be logins, it's got to be behavior, and also what's happened in the past, and then it can model and it can adapt. Amazon's got a few products like Macy and also GuardDuty. GuardDuty's interesting because it can actually also say if there's employees with suspicious behavior, and one is if they're doing Bitcoin mining during the day, which is, you know, prohibited in your in your companies. And just yesterday, I was at Chevron, and they had a Bitcoin ATM there. And it said, one Bitcoin, $4,300. And I'm thinking, how many people are going to be using this ATM? However, it's becoming more prevalent. So the one thing that I wanted to mention for cybersecurity is that I had mentioned before, is with multiple different devices, et cetera, the handle of being able to protect your data becomes more of a challenge. And too many people are falling onto what is actually more convenient, and so they'll check all those giving away data, giving away, you know, all of their protection, et cetera, just to get to that fun app, just to get to that, you right. know, whatever it is.
So didn't Dr. Dimer talk about the auction on our data?
Thing.
Right?
Yeah. But that's a little bit about cybersecurity.
Yeah. So I think that the sort of general sense there is that the application of machine learning across this incredibly enormous and incredibly rapidly changing set of data that is security, and you know, so even everything from the edge in to data, securing data itself, is a great application for the sort of brute force of approach of machine learning, right?
Yeah, you can't be too lazy. You always have to continue to move forward with it.
Yeah, that whole 24-hour statistician comment that Dr. Dimer made, right? So I'm gonna switch gears on that one just a little bit and talk just for a minute about another really interesting use for machine learning. And it's, you know, so Tom and Matt maybe to talk a little bit or about some experiences or what they've seen with natural language processing applications for machine learning, where we're actually dealing with tremendous volumes of text. And there's some examples in this space like medical triage that are really interesting as well.
No, I've really been speaking. All right, great. Yeah, I think what we're trying to get at is that when you have that captured data that gives you wide prediction, so we just heard about how get as much data as you can, if you get as much data of a certain kind, you can really, really leverage machine learning today. And so security is a huge area. Text, natural language processing, understanding speech, so we have, you know, fantastic translation capabilities that are rapidly increasing. We have fantastic understanding of text that can be used, for instance, in legal triage. I don't know if people know this, but the whole legal industry is being transformed with AI because the initial part of the job is not being scaled with paralegals.
I'm not sure that people do know that, Matt, though.
Well, okay, so people may not know this, but the entire legal industry is being transformed because the initial part of the job is not being scaled with paralegals anymore. Both inside and out of counsel firms are using AI to legal triage legal documents to understand the first response. And that's a big deal because it's a high risk, high value space, but it's one of these places that you can apply if you have text. You understand the structures of it. You can really, really use these systems to enrich and understand your text and automate many, many different workflows.
But I think it's interesting because you're talking about a scenario where the AI is making an initial set of decisions and routing things, right?
Yep.
But there's still a human behind that that's actually doing something.
Augmentation, but replacing what you can replace with the tools available today. That's kind of the name of that game. And that whole area of natural language is one of the big pillars that's used with machine learning to give us these really effective solutions right now.
Tom?
Yeah, I think one of the things to keep in mind is all of these APIs and all of these little parts can be daisy chained together, right? So, you know, the STT algorithm that does speech to text enables you to find out what was said. Right, and then you can take that, and then you can start doing captioning, and then you can take those types of things in terms of object recognition, visual, facial recognition, et cetera, to know what's in "quote unquote" the video, and you can start to put these things together in a map into the content. I'm particularly jazzed about NLU because I think that its impact in being able to educate people and to be able to really be useful in terms of knowledge transfer. Is quite amazing. So if you go, for example, to watson.ted.com, we index 2,200 TED Talks. And you start to think about this, you know, you want to find something. It's really hard, right? I mean, you're dependent upon someone who's gone in and made markers where they think there's something interesting, but not, might not be interesting to you. So, you know, what does a human want to do? Will DNA bring back the woolly mammoth? And if you ask that kind of question, that's the kind of question you want to really be able to ask a person sort of masquerading as a machine, right? And then if as the systems get more intelligent, you know, that virtual playhead is right there, you can accept, deny, and everything's curated for you, but you're asking it as you would ask a professor, or you would ask a, you know, a librarian, whomever it might be. Those things really, I think, are powerful.
You know, it's where you're starting to drift toward the natural language interpretation. I think it's a really fascinating point, though, to talk about just, you know, for a few seconds, the sort of application of the tools and pieces, right? So, like, you know, that's a really important point, I think, for the room to understand, is that these tools come in little bits, and they don't necessarily come as a holistic solution. So you'll see tools like, you know, the Amazon recognition product or Google's version of that and the other players in that space. And those things sort of present as this holistic tool, but the reality is that they're one part of a set of tools that you'll implement when you go to actually use machine learning to actually solve a problem, right? You may end up passing your content through multiple tools, right? Cool. So, Kyle, you've done some work with your data, right? The data, you know, at Monster, right? So, have you seen any success in that?
Well, I mean, I was just thinking about, like, machine learning and automation, some tools, and kind of the first time I used it was, like, I did a lot of clipping out masks in Photoshop and automation, right? And so you save that as a script, and you hit an F key to run that script, right? So if you think about it, that's kind of the beginning of AI 5-10 years ago, right? Before it became, like, a cognitive service or a service in a computer or something of that nature. And then they came up with the fit image command, because the whole idea was like, oh, I've got this like landscape or portrait image and I want to be able to fit it within here but not squish my image, right? And all of that was like the beginning of what I would consider AI. And I've always thought that automation, I hate doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. And then also being able to maybe augment or maybe enhance that. So we've done some tests where we've actually connected our digital asset management system. So all of our images actually run through the out-of-the-box Microsoft Computer Vision. And I would say the results are mixed. You know, we have a couple of things, like we tag colors and we have captions, and then it also tags like whether or not the content is suggestive, or it'll like count how many people's faces are in the images. And all of the demos that you see from people are like, they use obvious things. Like they take a, you know, a family of four in a pool, which it's obvious that there's four faces in there, and then when they show you the demo, hey, look, there's four faces, and it shows two kids and two adults. Well, yeah, that's a really super cool image. But take an image of a BMX rider going off a jump. Okay, the caption out of the box computer vision is a man flying through an air on a skateboard. Okay, that brings me no value. Like, that caption is useless. So now I have to take that out of the box computer vision, and I have to do a custom vision and actually create a trained version where I tag 20, 30, 100 images.
That's right.
And the challenge is that none of that is available out of the box, meaning that there's no service that I can go to and say, hey, this is available. What I have to do is I actually have to go and spend 100 hours of development, build my own endpoint, build my own website tool, build my own tagging tool, and then connect that to my custom vision or whatever, you know, cognitive right. service I have, whether or not that's a custom one or a whatever it is, and then at that point, I can connect that to my DAM and actually start training it. So I would say it's, from an out-of-the-box perspective and ease of use, I mean, it was an endpoint and a setup in Azure, so it took me 15 minutes to set it up. And is it adding value? I think from a creative perspective, the creative directors are like, oh, this is cool. I can go and look for something that's black, and they can see a whole bunch of black images or a whole bunch of orange images or something from a color perspective. So somebody doing a layout or a graphic design, I think there's value. But captions, I think it's kind of tough because there are certain things that you have to go in and actually sure. tag and train and do things.
Yeah, and it's been an interesting sort of exploration for us as well. We fed content through some of the commercial AIs and the vision systems and had it tell us that Harry Potter was in Batman and that Patrick Stewart was in Justice League, which he wasn't.
Would have been good.
Lots of it would have. I think, you know, a little Marvel crossover, right? I think it would have been really good. But that's actually a great sort of segue into the the last part of this panel discussion, which is like the M&E killer apps, right? So for all the M&E folks sitting in the room, the two of the killer apps, and there are a few others: automated rich metadata generation, right? So I want every frame of every film that Warner Brothers has ever made to have rich metadata about everything that's in that image, right? And the other one is sort of automated compliance and censorship. So look in every frame of every video that I have and identify all the suggestive or potentially troublesome materials and tag those, right? And there's some challenges with both of those. To sort of set this up, there's a little bit of a thought exercise, which is, what do y'all think the challenges are if you want to catalog the DC Comics or the Marvel Universe, right? How do you enable the tools, and I have a list here that I'm going to read because it's a little bit daunting. How do you enable the tools so that they can understand that Bruce Wayne, Azrael, Dick Grayson, Bane, Jason Todd, Tim Drake, Damian Wayne, and Terry McGinnis, all characters in the Batman universe, have all put the cowl on at some point and actually been Batman, so they are Batman? How do you teach an AI to understand that across a canon of materials? How do you teach the AI to understand that there are 100 different vehicles, over 100 different vehicles, that have either been drawn or have been real vehicles that are the Batmobile? There's over 100 of them in the history of Batman. So how do you teach an AI? Because when you're talking about automated metadata generation, the sort of grand vision is, I jam all the DC comic content in this side, and it spits out this incredible set of data about all the materials, right? And I think that's what the grand vision is. So I'm going to throw it to the panel. Erica.
So I started out as a library science developer and automator, and I think it begins with a taxonomy, and there's a thing with AI called knowledge maps, and you have to have the appropriate team. And you need to have quants, you need to have your data scientists, you need to have your knowledge maps, and the knowledge maps actually go to your business and what you're looking for. So the answer to that is that you need to spend a lot of time on creating those maps so then the AI could, sort through it appropriately. And there's actually a lot of applications out there that are no longer out of the box that have been built out. There's probably thousands that do archiving and predictive and et cetera, especially for the entertainment company. But you can go to places like USC, who has Corto, which is a new product that's getting really advanced, and there's a lot of emotional behavior, and that was the, Eric had mentioned, that's a challenge. And yeah, making sure that we stay on the line with keeping on track, right? AI should be augmentation of humans. It should not be, it should enhance us. It should help us. It should not be overtaking us.
So I think the theme you'll hear as we talk through this, and others are going to have comments, is there's an investment. There's a significant investment required to make this stuff work.
I agree with the investment. I mean, that's a huge piece that I found with the out-of-the-box pieces is, your business, your need, in the instance of Monster Energy, I mean, we have action sports. So, I mean, it would be awesome if I could take all my images and feed them in there and it spit out who the athletes were or who the people were or who the models were in the events. Because from that perspective, I could then take my librarians and assign them to other tasks and they could just kind of spot check those images, right? And all of a sudden that becomes more of that augmentation. But I still need that initial investment of building out what is my tool, what is my training, how am I going to get there? And right now it seems kind of like it's difficult because there's a lot of people who are super, super passionate about it, and then others that are like, I kind of get it, but it's not all the way there yet.
But there's still a real risk for error, right? So if you have error in the data that's created by the AI, especially when we start talking about things like compliance, if there's an error in a compliance assessment and you trust that AI to do that work, there's real liability involved there, real money at risk, right? Real sort of impacts from governments and other entities that can cause problems. So Matt seems like he's chomping, or maybe Tom.
I think that, if these weren't learning and trainable systems, then we shouldn't even bother, because we would always have this problem, right? There would always, this would be like digitizing your archives, but we're not going to digitize the archives because it's going to cost $200 million to digitize the archives, and we don't know what's valuable, so we won't even start, right? I mean, we've had these problems for 30 years in this industry. You know, what do you want to invest in? And this is an ongoing thing, right? I mean, this is like a brilliant, beautiful child that can learn, and the more that you train it, the more that it will ultimately get right. You know, but the notion of it just, it's going to get some portion of it right at the beginning, and it's going to get better and better, but you have to make that ongoing investment. I was at a studio yesterday. They had this job where they were working on it, putting people on it, you know, different vendors, facial object recognition. Wouldn't it be great if we, all of our films, we could scrape them and see all the times that we were looking at Mercedes-Benz vehicles, BMW vehicles, that's as far as they went. And they were able to solve the problem, right? Because they trained it. You know, they trained it, kept training. Here's what it looks like, et cetera, et cetera. No business case, not one.
Yeah.
Nobody signed up for it. Oh, we'll be able to sell this, they'll be able to license this clip, et cetera, et cetera. Meaningless. You know, so I think you really have to think through, how does this help the creative process? How does it, you know, not make things formulaic, which, you know, creatives won't like, and then ultimately how does it help us, you know, generate something so that we can ultimately pay for this.
There's a great example that I talk about sometimes. Matt's probably heard me talk about this before. If y'all remember the original iPhone commercial, lots of folks picking up telephones and saying hello, hello, hello. Famous people. There were maybe 30 clips from different films. And that exercise to select the 30-ish clips that were actually part of that original commercial was dozens of hours of very highly compensated individuals' time sitting in a room racking their brains to remember iconic films that had hellos in them, right? And so that there's no business case thing only holds true until there is one.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to come up. That's a really good example of the... the idea of the investment in data. So Erica, you talked about it, Eric talked about it, and just talking about the different kind of data. So when he talks about getting more and more data, there is a limit to the machine learning approach where you simply start to describe everything perfectly. The list, and I hope, David, you can share that, of the Batmobile cars. You know, he drove a Lamborghini, a Corvette, and a Jaguar at one point. Now, people may not think of that as a Batmobile, but actually those are real Batmobiles. If you go and you define all of that information, you're on the way on the data side to creating a one-to-one map of the world with your data. And you don't need the AI at that point because you've actually just defined everything. The goal with the data that supports the AI is actually to go to, is it, well, sorry, the goal with the data that you really need is to help it get beyond that machine learning and narrow training set problem. So if you have a data set and you want to be able to suddenly find everything that says hello, you can't use a machine learning approach because you didn't train it to find that. What we really need to do is get to this sort of next phase of AI, which is about understanding and knowledge. And it's a different approach. It uses a lot of the techniques, and it actually has a formalized portion of it that's called the knowledge representation. And this data is not every single possibility that we could imagine that you need to put in there so the computer can go and then generate more of that data. This is actually data that's about the topic, the understanding, the knowledge. And that area, and this is a big shift, and that area of data is going to be what drives the kind of the next advance beyond AI. So we talked about a lot of areas where AI is awesome today, but there's going to be these limits to these hard problems like compliance or actually accurately scaling out and being able to categorize entire film catalogs. And it's going to be because the people have invested and created this kind of knowledge data, and then the AI is able to use the knowledge data, increase the knowledge data. So I think that's going to be the thing that makes the next limit.
Inferences.
We did a really cool project for the Grammys just recently, and it's, you know, we talk about smart entertainment, but, you know, really fun entertainment too. And this is all about connections. And so, you know, we indexed tens of thousands of different artists, and it was all about the connections. So you know, you could put in your, you know, a particular favorite artist, and then you could see the vector of all the different places he or she has been in throughout their career, if they had sort of a long career. Oh, they were in this band, and they were in this band, or they know this person. It was just a very infectious way to put a fun, to put a fun application in people's hands, if they're passionate about music and passionate about the connections that are in that world. And, you know, that was all, you know, driven by data, all driven by connections, and all driven by, you know, ultimately, a machine.
So in the sort of last couple of minutes that we have, a couple of other technologies that I think are interesting, I'll throw those to Eric and Kyle as well. The sort of concept of reinforcement learning, it was hugely talked about at the AI Summit at reInvent last year. And this concept that we can now start to teach machines through reinforcement, the same way we teach our children, so that they learn that how to do the right thing or try to do the right thing. So I think that's gonna be an interesting vector as we move forward, like knowledge representation.
And I agree with that. It is an interesting progression. However, it is happening, and it's important that we stay, up to date with that. There's a couple of things that I think about when you bring that up, and one is that question of why. And that was the biggest thing when I was at MIT that we couldn't solve. So there's different things like Mechanical Turk, et cetera, that, mm-hmm. Are trying to solve the why.
And the why of why you use AI or machine learning or the technology?
Or why AI answers it the way it does.
Oh, yeah. No, we could have three more panels on the crazy answers you get from AI.
Right. And so, but coming to that that learning behavior, you have to instill the why in order to make it make sense.
Instill or understand?
There's algorithms that you have to implement, mm-hmm. not just understand. Because, there's a time where the why is more important than the answer.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Kyle, is there anything cool you've seen?
I think more of mine is more like the forward thinking. And I think you had mentioned something about contracts and like the contract management pieces. And I think for me, it's like I want to be able to connect athlete images to contracts to maybe automate, things that are like, expiration dates or simple things like that that are not necessarily out of the box, so that I can maybe run a report that says, hey, you have 300 assets that are now going to be expired, or, simple business needs, kind of going back to that thing of like, what's the business case, right? And looking at the small pieces, because I think AI is this huge, big piece, and you can look at, oh, I need to catalog all these films or everything else, but what if I could expire an asset? Right? Something very simple that is it's a yes or no question, like the date ends on the contract, so now I scrub my assets and it is associated to athlete XYZ and they're expired. So that to me is really where I see the benefits of us taking sort of that small steps, kind of to your comment of like, hey, there's this big piece and we always have these technology problems, but just start somewhere and start moving it, because you're gonna start moving
those. That's a great way to sort of round out the time, right? The start with something, right? Even if you just test, just run your stuff through tools that make sense to you, just to see what happens. And I think in some cases you'll be pleasantly surprised. In other cases, as we have been in some cases, you'll be just surprised by the fact that what you got makes no sense, and then you'll be asking the why question. So I don't know, does anybody have anything they want to add here at the end? We're a little bit over.
Just to think about the question, does AI make your data smarter? It can, but I think the big thing is data.
It will.
Absolutely. Data is absolutely going to make your AI smarter.
Yeah, absolutely. And data, AI will make your data smarter eventually. It's just how do you apply it now to get there?
Thanks. David, thank you. Awesome. Give that panel a round of applause. Great follow-up to that keynote. Thank you for moderating.